We continue with our series where we've been talking about marriage, and in particular, we want to look at a lesson this morning that is entitled, What Every Marriage Requires, and we want to think in regards to what is the effort that we put into marriage. If it's intended to last a lifetime, how is it that we accomplish that? That's not an easy task. It's the one relationship that God says He intends lasts for an entire lifetime. It takes precedence over the relationship even of you and your children. That's the nature of the agreement or the vows that we take when we get married, that we should leave father and mother and we should be joined to our spouse. It's breaking and changing the relationship. When I perform a marriage ceremony, a wedding ceremony for a couple, sometimes what I do is have the couples turn and face their parents and make sure we understand this will no longer primarily be your daughter. They will no longer primarily be your parents. The relationship that takes primary position is the marriage relationship. And so it becomes important. You don't cease to become somebody's daughter or somebody's son. But that's no longer the primary relationship. We have three sons. They're all three still our sons, but they are primarily somebody's husband. And that needs to be the primary relationship for them on this earth. And they need to make sure that they understand that. So what we're going to do is quickly go through four different goals or different ways, steps that we can take in order to keeping the covenant. What every single marriage requires. What it takes in order to get me from this point to that point. Four keys to keeping the covenant is what we want to talk about. And the first of those is that you've got to decide on your goals. Marriages have to have goals just like anything else has to have a goal. And the reason for that is that goals give us direction. They allow us to know where we're going. I love a quote from one gentleman that I read. I used to do some sailing. I did a lot of boating and sailing in Florida. When we were growing up, spent a good portion of my life on the water. And until I first started sailing, I just always assumed that if you're in a sailboat, you needed to make sure that the wind was behind you in order to go. But that's not true. You can sail into the wind or with the wind behind you. It doesn't make any difference. It does change how long it's going to take and how it works. But you do what's called tacking. If the wind's coming into you, you're actually sailing like at a 45-degree angle, and it makes the wind wrap around so it catches the sail and pushes you, and you go back and forth like this. Well, occasionally you would get asked a question when you go out sailing. Somebody would say, is it a good wind today? Well, you have to know something to be able to answer that question. You have to know where it is that you're going. The quote from one gentleman that I always appreciate, he said, if you don't know what port you're headed for, no wind is a good wind. And that's true in marriage as well. It becomes necessary that we understand the nature of why there are goals there. I want you to turn to Hebrews chapter 12 for just a moment. Hebrews chapter 12 is a wonderful statement made about our Lord. In the context of being able to run the race of Christianity and to complete our lives as Christians and to stay that path and to be able to accomplish what God has for us. It says in chapter 12 and verse 1, therefore we also, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. He says, first you got to drop the excess weight. We understand that. Do whatever you have to do. Get rid of the things that are a hindrance. And that becomes an issue in our marriages as well. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has set down the right hand of the throne of God. It's not only an issue of direction, but we also need to understand that if we are headed a certain direction, that it is the goals that will keep us focused. And that's what it says about Jesus. I've often wondered, and we've talked about before in some of the classes and such, why did the disciples all flee Jesus? And yet Jesus, who went through incredible agony in the garden, it tells us he was in agony in the garden, praying that this cup pass from him. And yet when that prayer was over and he went back that final time and wakes up the disciples and says, we need to go, that time is here. From that point forward, there is nothing but resolve in Jesus. It's no longer the agony that it was before. He's no longer pleading with God. He's already put his prayer before God, and he says, this is the hour that I have come for. This is it. And so he's got complete resolve. But as soon as the soldiers come and they're going to arrest Jesus, from that point forward, the disciples just flee. They're scared to death. I think there's an absolute key in the discussions that went on in the garden. When Jesus went to the disciples, he says, watch and pray. And he went and prayed, and they slept. And he said, watch and pray, and he went and prayed, and they slept. And he says, watch and pray, and he went and prayed, and they slept. I think it was his relationship with the Father that the Hebrew writer is talking about that allowed him to endure. He could see what was beyond. He had an incredible focus. He had a goal, and he understood that he had to accomplish that goal. The disciples had let that fall by the wayside, had lost their focus, didn't maintain the kind of fervor that Jesus did, and all of a sudden, when you're under pressure, that's when it collapses. In marriage, it becomes so critical that we have goals so that we know where we want to get. I would tell you, in the couples that I counsel with, very few couples ever sit down and say, where do we want our marriage to be next year? Where would we like our marriage to be in 5 years? What would we like to be different? What areas in our marriage would we like to grow in? I watched an interview with a tennis player this morning who just knocked out a number one seed in the Australian Open. And I thought it was interesting because she's in the quarterfinals now, but when they're interviewing, she said, my goal for this tournament was to make the quarterfinals. So I don't know what she does now because she no longer has quite the focus that she did before. But setting that goal makes a difference. And we need to, if you don't do that, you'll lose the focus, you'll lose the direction, and you won't notice that until some kind of problem arises, some kind of difficulty. And all of a sudden, if we're not absolutely focused on the same thing, then we find that we're going to struggle in that kind of situation. After our relationship with God, our marriage has to be the priority of our lives. That is critical. It is critical. My relationship with God is first and foremost, I understand that, but second to that has to be my relationship with my spouse. That is the relationship that takes second position over, directly under my relationship with God. He says we need to be focused on that. And if we're going to do that, you're going to have to establish some boundaries. That just has to be. You're going to have to establish some boundaries. I can't have 100 priorities in my life. I used to have a to-do list, day planner kind of thing when I worked in secular work. One of the things that I always noticed when I would go into work is you've got that to-do list for today, and almost every day I could look down at the to-do list and say, that's not happening. There's no way I'm accomplishing all that's on the list today. Well, that's a good thing to understand that, because the first thing that does is make you prioritize the list. If everything can't be done, something has to be wiped off the list. You have to acknowledge that on the front end. If you try to do it all and fail in many things, it's not nearly as effective as if I understand some things are a priority. Your marriage has to be the priority. It takes precedence over your friendships. It takes precedence over your job. It takes precedence over your hobbies, whatever the case may be. It takes precedence over everything except your relationship with God. You have to have boundaries. Secondly, you're going to have to develop a plan. This is exactly the method that God uses throughout his scriptures. We mentioned this on the first lesson on Friday evening. God says, let me get you to think a certain way first. In other words, I have to get you to have a certain mindset. Go through the book of Philippians sometimes. He talks about the mind about 10 different times. You need to think this way, and if you think this way, then this is what you need to do. Well, that's what he does in general in life. And if your marriage is going to be good, it's good to have a goal. This is where we want to be. But you're going to have to develop a plan to accomplish the goal. What am I going to do today to make sure that my marriage is stronger tomorrow than it is today? What am I going to do this year to make sure that my marriage is stronger next year? I have to have some kind of plan for that, whether that's the amount of time that we're going to spend in prayer together, whether that's the amount of time we're going to read together, whether it's the time that we're going to spend just with each other and sharing and knowing each other. You have to develop some kind of plan. The difference in these two is that a goal is what you need to be, a plan is what you need to do to be what you need to be. Both are equally effective. I think God would tell us throughout life, as a Christian, I want to be a better Christian next year than I am this year. Would that be a goal of yours? You want to be a stronger, better Christian next year than I was this year. Well, I'm going to have some kind of plan for that. I'm going to have to put something into it. It's not going to just happen. You know, my kids, sometimes we'd have discussions with them, you know, when kids are in school and you're saying, look, you need to be a better student. I want to be a better student. They didn't want to do what was necessary sometimes to be a better student, but they might want to be a better student. Well, maybe you're going to have to forget some of the hobbies. Maybe you're going to have to crack the books a little bit more. Maybe you're going to have to ask for help, whatever. You need to have some kind of plan if you're going to accomplish something. And I think God would always have us to understand that that's the case, that we're going to have to put into effect something that we need to do. And it's going to require on our part some real effort as you're developing your plan. You ever had that syndrome? My wife reads through the Bible virtually every single year. As do I, we do it two different ways. I have, my goals are different. She has one of those checklists, you know, that's got, if you read this today and put a little check mark by it and you read this tomorrow, when you get to the end, if there's check marks in all the boxes, you know you've read every bit of it. That's her plan for reading. For her, that's a very effective plan. If my goal was to read through, but I didn't have some kind of plan, I do it in a different manner. But if all you have is the goal, you're going to see those things fall by the wayside. Have you ever said, you know what, I need to be praying more? But then you find out a few months later, you're really not praying anymore. I need to be reading the Bible more. I need to be studying more. It is so easy to set goals spiritually, to want to be better spiritually, and yet not be able to accomplish those because we don't put it into a plan. Les Parrott says, make no mistake, you'll never achieve your ideal marriage as a mere passenger. You and your partner must have your hands on the wheel. I like that quote. He's just saying, you're going to have to put forth the effort. Wasn't that exactly what God would tell us? That we have to put forth the effort? How am I going to plan the charting of a course? How do I prevent drifting? Because a marriage that is not moving forward is like a boat that is not anchored nor motored and is sitting in the water. It's just going to move wherever the water moves it. That's what's going to happen in our marriage. We have to have a plan, and we have to put that plan into effect. So how do we do that? Well, I would tell you, it absolutely has to start here. Ask for divine guidance. Psalm 127 and verse 1 tells us that what? Unless the Lord builds the house, they build it in vain. I need His help. God, what do You want my home to be? What do You want me to be? If I want to be a better husband, we spent time on Friday and Saturday talking about what God says to husbands and wives. And so what am I going to do with that? What am I going to do with that? Because it's fun sometimes and it's interesting sometimes to listen to the information, but do we do something with it? That's the key. I'm going to have to put those things into effect. I'm going to have to put them into the plan of my life if I want to change. I listened to a football coach being interviewed one time. He had some national championships and college football coach, and he was asked, what's the best team you ever coached? And I loved his response. He said, I can't tell you that. He said, if you'll tell me where every one of the boys that I coached was 10 years after they left my program, I'll tell you what was the best team I ever coached. I like that response. Because he was teaching them a lot more than football. He said, I'm trying to teach them life lessons. Tell me where they were 10 years after they were away from me, and I'll tell you something about how good they were. Isn't that the way preaching and teaching works? I get back home and people say, was it a good meeting? I have no idea. How can I answer that? 5 years from now, if people's lives are changed and marriages are changed and deeper relationships exist, yeah, it was a good meeting. The word's a good word, but only if it changes our lives. I mean, you could say the Bible, yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful word. But God says it's like a mirror. You know, if you look in and you're dirty and you walk away and say, that doesn't matter. Why'd you even look in the mirror? He says, are we using it? We have to make sure that we're asking for divine guidance, that we're asking God to chart this course for us. You're going to have to decide what matters most. In Mark chapter 8 and verse 37, Jesus asked a vital life question that many people have failed in this world, and many people continue to fail in the right answer to this question. You remember when Jesus said, You tell me what's most valuable. He said it by asking, what would you give in exchange for your soul? How do you evaluate that? Because a lot of people will sell their soul for things that are of no value, it seems like. You just wonder sometimes. But he's saying, in general, as a Christian, what really matters the most? Your soul? Or your pleasure? Or whatever else it is we may decide to pursue? He's saying, in marriage, I'm going to have to decide what matters most. I have to decide that because that's what I need to pursue in my marriage relationship. I mentioned that we have three children. You have to decide when you have children. My marriage relationship is still the primary relationship. Even when the children are young, that doesn't mean they don't occupy a bulk of the time. But the priority, you better make sure you're still working on the marriage, because if children become the priority in the marriage, when children leave the home, the marriage struggles mightily. Don't ever lose the relationship. Understand what matters most. Even when we are occupied and I'm tired and the kids have run us ragged, do we need to make sure as a couple that we are dedicating time and effort to each other? That becomes critical. Why? Because it matters most. Are there times, we mentioned when Paul told the Galatians, don't grow weary in well-doing. Have you ever just gotten worn out from trying to do something good? I mean, that happens. And Paul's saying, don't lose sight of the fact that that's still what's most important. Don't stop doing the things that are good. Don't stop serving God. We need to make sure that we make the marriage the absolute priority. One of the authors I was reading wrote this. It's a lady by the name of Michelle Weiner Davis. She said, the number one cause for the breakdown of marriages today is the same issue that causes infidelity. Couples aren't prioritizing their marriage. She says, people spend their time on their careers, their kids, community affairs, hobbies, and sports, but they take their spouses for granted. It just doesn't work that way. In other words, to have a strong marriage, your spouse must come first. So if you decide what matters most, you're going to have to decide next, like you do with that to-do list, what are you going to change? Because if one thing matters most, something else that maybe I figure out in my marriage, you know what, I'm spending too much time on this. I can't concentrate on my marriage if I'm dedicating as much time as I am to this. And so there may be some things that I have to change. And you sit down with your wife or you sit down with your husband and say, here's what we're doing. What do we need to change to make sure that our marriage never slips, that we're making sure that the marriage is the priority? Decide the things that have to change. That's a natural conclusion to considering what matters most. And then set some short-term, very specific goals. The first time I ever read a quote about Martin Luther where he said, I had so much to do today that I started with 2 hours of prayer. So just think about that concept for a second. Because I'm just telling you, most of us understand and think, I've got so much to do today, if I start with 2 hours of prayer, I'll never get it done. He's saying, I have so much to do that he felt compelled to start with 2 hours of prayer. So let's suppose you want to pray a lot more. Try starting with 2 hours of prayer tomorrow. That ain't going to happen. We're just not, if you don't already do that, you're going to find out that this doesn't work. You can't just drop to your knees and pray for 2 hours if you're not used to doing that. But if you want to increase your prayer life, maybe you say, you know what, I'm going to make it a point to pray for 10 minutes every single morning, every single night. I'm going to make sure that I pray at those times every single day this week. That's different than saying, I'm going to pray for 20 minutes a day for the next 365 days. That's good to have as a goal, but set a short term. Work on short term goals. We need to make sure that we're thinking in those kinds of terms. And so once we do that, the third, another mindset. You see, you've got a mindset followed by an action, another mindset. Determined to commit. My wife and I spoke several wedding vows to each other. Promises. Determined you're going to commit to the things that marriage is. That my mindset is that I'm going to do whatever is necessary in order to change. Whatever God requires of me, I'm going to do. You're going to find that the two major causes of us not committing the way that we should. Well, let's see if we can get that to advance. There you go. That's what your vows are about. And to understand that commitment is a choice. This isn't something that I don't have a choice in. I need to make sure that I am committed. I'm going to make that choice, and it's going to require time, and it's going to require sacrifice. Before I became a Christian, I played a lot of baseball at that time, baseball and softball. And I understood. It took me a while to accept Christ in the sense of allowing myself to be buried with Him in baptism, because I understood the day I do that, I'm going to have to give some of this up. And there was a while that I wasn't willing to give some of that up. I'm not proud of that. But there was a time when I said, you know what, I understand what I'm going to have to do, not willing to commit to doing it. That's the way marriage is. It is a lifetime commitment of dedicating yourself to God and one other person. And it's going to require time. It's going to require sacrifice on our part to accomplish that. The whole idea of, that's a choice I'm making. You remember Joshua laying before the people of Israel, the idea of, look, it's your choice. You choose. You do what you want to do. But I'm telling you, here's my commitment. As for me and my house, we need to make that commitment. We need to have that mindset. And then once you have that commitment, then you end up with the last of the four steps in the keys to keeping this covenant. And that is, now you're going to have the dedication. That's actually doing something. Requires patience. I'm committed to my wife, but I'm telling you, it takes patience to be married to my wife. Now, I can say that, see, because she's not here. But it takes more patience to be married to me, and I understand that. It takes patience to be married to her because we're so different. Sometimes I just don't understand, like we talked about yesterday or Friday. I just don't understand, and it requires patience. Sometimes it takes endurance to be married. Sometimes you bear up under hard things. Illnesses come into marriage. Problems come in with children. Problems come in with financial types of issues. Problems can come into marriage in so many different forms. And you have to have a commitment that says, we're going to work through whatever these issues are, and I'm going to have the endurance. But sometimes it takes endurance. You can't just solve everything like this in marriage. There are some things that you just continue to work. Life changes. I promise to be married to my wife from this day forward. That was one of the things that we said. That's ever-changing. Ever-changing. But I have to be dedicated to continuing to do the things that I need to do. I would illustrate this to you this way. A few years ago, a whole group of us went out to Colorado, about 50 from our congregation, went to Colorado for a week. We decided we were going to do, I'd never been at elevation before. You grow up in Florida, elevation 3.5 feet. So that's what your lungs are used to. And then you go to Colorado. We were staying at about 7,500 feet. We were starting a hike. We decided we're going to do a summit hike. The hike started at 10,000 feet and hiked to 13,000 feet. They made a major mistake. They asked me to lead the group. I had talked to the guide. The guide says you need to walk. It should take you 4 hours to do the hike up. It was 4 miles one way. It should take you 4 hours to get up. I'm thinking, this guy's lost his mind. I mean, I had been conversing with him over the phone and stuff. So I got on my treadmill that we have at home, and I set it at one. I want to see. So let's see what a 1 mile per hour pace of walking is, and you're going, you feel like you're not moving. I thought, there's no way. So they appointed me to be in the lead, so I was in the lead, and I just started walking like I'd walk through the neighborhood. 9 minutes, 59 seconds into the hike, we're all sitting on a log or wherever we can find, trying to find oxygen somewhere. We are sucking wind, just trying to breathe. Then we slowed the pace down. We continued to walk. We're taking that hike, and it gets harder to breathe at 13,000 even than it is at 10. There's virtually no oxygen there if you're not used to that. And so it got to the end of the hike. I determined, I'm going to make that summit. I could have quit at any point, but I said, I'm going to make that summit. And it got to a point to where I'd be walking about from here to that first pew and stop, catch your breath again, and then start walking again. About the last half of the mile, there were buzzards circling. They thought for sure this one's done. One of my sons was with us. He was genuinely concerned that it was something more than just lack of breath, as often I was stopping. And he got to a point to where literally it was almost like you feel like you're going, putting one foot in front of the other. I can take this one step. I can take this one step. When Jesus is sitting there looking at the goal that's beyond him, it wasn't a matter of, yeah, I'm just gonna sprint through the whole thing. But it's, I've got to do what the Lord wants me to do today. Remember Jesus himself saying, you know what, you better forget about tomorrow. Today's troubles are sufficient. Amen to that. Today's troubles are sufficient of their own. Deal one day at a time. Your marriage is the same way. There will come times in your marriage where you feel like we're just barely progressing. I feel like we can't get ahead of the game. And I'm not talking about because the relationship is rocky. There may be other issues in there, and you can't get that feeling. You just have to put one foot down. You know what? We can at least take this next step. We can at least take this next step. Because that's the way Christianity is. That's the way marriage is. At one point, I told them, go ahead. Go on, I'll catch up to you in a minute. I was going to get my breath. Let me tell you something. If you're ever in that environment, and it's no different in marriage, catching up is way harder than staying up, however hard staying up is. Stay with it every single day, every single moment. Because if you let the relationship start to slip, it is way harder to get it back to where it was than it is just to keep it there if you keep moving. Mindsets and actions. Have a goal, have a plan. Be committed and then be dedicated. Keep walking in the marriage relationship. Thank you for your attention this morning.